RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
DeMar picked up 55 feet away by McDaniels as DeRozan over the 8-second line, dribble drive to the rim with a right-handed flush. Oh, my goodness. That was nasty. That was nasty. He just gave McDaniels an NBA poster.
That's how it sounded right here on The Score. Chuck Swirsky on the call. Final hour coming at you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am the aforementioned Anthony Herron. You can find me on social at Big Ant Herron. I'm going to take it back out, though, to the Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book, where you can find my next guest at SBN underscore Ricky. He is Ricky O'Donnell, writer and editor for SB Nation. What's happening, Ricky? How you doing this evening?
What's going on? Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you taking the time, man. The Bulls themselves, I want to get into some of the specifics of the roster minutia or lack thereof at the moment, but it's a topic I've been talking about a lot as it relates to the Bears and the way that talent maybe hasn't been developed in some ways there, especially on offense, and with the baseball teams in town. A similar concern that I've had there with both the Cubs and their short championship window, and the White Sox for a window that really never got realized because young talent didn't get developed there. The basketball world is different, where guys have a lot of their own individual trainers and personal coaches that they go work with. But how are the Bulls situated in that regard, and especially since AK and Eversley have been running this thing? They're young players here, where you can make the case Coby White has certainly developed. Ayo Dosunmu, you know, seemingly in the midst of still developing pretty well here. But the Bulls are not in a window of accomplishing anything of substance. Specific to development, how are the Bulls situated? And how productive is their development infrastructure?
Yeah, the Bulls have been terrible at development throughout the past 10, 15 years. Coby White is obviously a big exception to that. For Coby to have this type of breakout in his fifth year is really unlikely and is really awesome to see. Coby seems like he's going to rise to become, you know, the new face of the franchise, the new guy who's sort of a cornerstone piece that you will continue to build with. So that's been a great development for the Bulls, but unfortunately it's been really the one positive development of the season. Otherwise, you know, you have to go back to Jimmy Butler to find the last real Bulls developmental success story. I personally give Butler and his incredible work ethic the credit for that over anything the Bulls did for him. Before that, you're talking about Taj Gibson and Luol Deng. So it's been a long time since the Bulls have been able to successfully develop young talent. It's been awesome to watch Coby do it this year, but Patrick Williams still kind of stagnating. I think he's been a bit better this year as someone who's watched almost every game, but, you know, his per-game numbers are identical to last year if you just pull up his stats page. So it's a big issue with the Bulls for sure. The Bulls continue to have a lot of issues, and really, like, when the Bulls hired that shooting coach this year, Peter Patton, I just thought, you know, this is a great hire for them, but it's like 10 years too late. You know, you're doing it how many years after you started this rebuild post-Jimmy Butler trade? They should be held to a higher standard. It's very similar to the White Sox. Reinsdorf organizations are cheap in a lot of ways that go under the radar. A lot of that is a lack of investment in developmental infrastructure, and I think that's part of the reason both the Bulls and the White Sox have been so underwhelming in recent years.
I very much agree with that assessment. It's one of those things that I think goes a bit underappreciated just when you see franchises that sustain success in all sports. When we look at it and say, okay, that player either did well or that player was a bust. That team sustained success or that coach should get fired. But there is a lot of minutia that goes into it. To stick with Coby White for a moment, though, where, you know, we've seen Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis become prominent players as they've left and gone elsewhere. The Bulls did keep Coby White here, and he has performed really well. Do you view him this season now getting through the halfway point? Is he an all-star snub, or did he not quite get to that status?
You know, there's only 12 all-star spots in each conference, so it's really competitive to be an all-star. Now, Trae Young's averaging 27 and 11, and he didn't become an all-star this year. So I think that Coby, you know, he's not quite at that level yet, but he's really good, and he's actually the type of player who you could fit into almost any lineup because he can play on or off the ball with pretty good positional size at 6'5". Seems like a big guard, but Coby doesn't have the longest arms. He's still kind of weak, I think, in his upper body. But, man, have you seen a lot of improvement from Coby this year? It's like every part of his game developed at the same time. It all coalesced to make him such a well-rounded, complete guard. He's getting so much of his offense this year off spot-ups. I believe he's averaging more points per game off spot-ups than any player in the NBA. Speaks to his quick catch-and-shoot ability, something the Bulls desperately needed on this team the last couple of years, especially when Io was the starting point guard last year, Coby in a smaller role off the bench, started to grow. Now we've seen that growth really take hold as Kobe's been the full-time starter this year. The handle's the big thing that jumps out to me. I also think he's a lot stronger in his lower body. Seems like he's grasping the game mentally, too. You can tell for young players like Coby coming into the league at 19 years old, the game's just too fast for them when they debut. I think, you know, now in year five, you can see the game starting to slow down with him. It comes from getting all those reps early in his career. It comes with, you know, his own work ethic in terms of his skill development, his ball handling, his shooting. And, you know, certainly it doesn't hurt that I believe he's hitting about 40% of his threes this year, which would be a career high. So Coby's been awesome. He's been the lone bright spot on the team. He's not someone you really want to build around, but I think he's definitely someone you want to build with. And the Bulls have him at a very, very team-friendly contract for the next two seasons after this one. So hopefully they can take advantage of that and, you know, quickly pivot this thing and try to put a decent team around Coby before you got to pay him again.
Is there much chance we see him in any other all-star event, like a three-point contest or anything?
Yeah, that'd be cool. Put Coby in the three-point contest. I'm all for it.
Yeah, let's hope so from his perspective. It'd be a nice honor for him this season if he can at least achieve at that level. There's been rumor, innuendo surrounding a bunch of different Bulls. Let's start with DeMar DeRozan here, where, you know, he's been a player with no shortage of rumors around him. The latest one had him perhaps tied to the Sixers, but it doesn't sound like that's going to happen at this point. Why not?
Yeah, DeRozan, really fascinating. Like, all the news around DeRozan's impending unrestricted free agency is that the Bulls want to keep him, but they don't want to break the bank to re-sign him. DeRozan's probably going to want a three-year deal, the way that Nikola Vucevic got one last summer. He's going to want a raise from what he's making right now, so he probably wants to be paid, you know, a little bit north of $30 million per year. And if you're the Bulls, it's kind of like, what's the point of doing that and keeping this team together? Because the Bulls have kept this team together since Lonzo Ball's injury. They have made zero trades since 2021. The only trade Arturis Karnišovas has made is trading up in the draft to get Julian Phillips at the last 2023 NBA draft. So basically, the Bulls have done nothing, which we know. And anyone who follows the team has been very frustrated by Karnišovas' inability to pivot off this era of the team. I think DeRozan is the one guy who could really cause a big shift in the team if they did move him. But DeRozan's still pretty good, let's be honest. At 34 years old, he's still, you know, a high-usage, low-turnover guy. He's still a very good scorer, but he's starting to slip down the age curve. He's worse this year than he was last year. If you look at his numbers, it's really on days with zero rest or short rest where his numbers fall off a cliff. If he's well-rested, he's still pretty good, but hey, that's part of the deal of being a 34-year-old professional athlete, and I don't know what year this is of his career, probably year 15 or 16, so DeRozan's just been around for a while. It was a great move for the Bulls to get him, but unfortunately, they also gave up a 2025 top 8 protected draft pick to the San Antonio Spurs for the right to get him. So, you know, I look at that and I think this is a great time for the Bulls to just blow up this roster to try to keep that pick next year by being one of the worst 8 teams in the league. Coby White's development has been really promising, but beyond that, they don't have enough good young talent on the team, and I think, you know, if you could move off DeRozan this year, it might be a pretty good idea. I also do think his presence does help Kobe in a sense, just by drawing two to the ball, opening up more spot-up opportunities for him. It's a tough decision, but listen, we know this Bulls team isn't good enough. DeRozan's the best player. I think it would make sense to trade off a lot of the key pieces, including him.
And with Zach's injury, reportedly, where it'll stretch through the trade deadline, then where does that leave the Bulls with Zach LaVine?
Yeah, well, no one wants Zach LaVine, right? That's all the reporting that's out there right now. Zach LaVine told the Bulls he was, quote, open to being traded, which means Zach LaVine requested a trade, but the Bulls can't really find anyone to take him. It's unfortunate for the Bulls because when they signed him to that super lucrative long-term extension, I thought that that was, you know, a fair deal for him at the time. Certainly it was a lot of money, but really good second options, which is basically what Zach is. They tend to get paid max contracts. You look at Brandon Ingram, Chris Middleton, look around the league, really good second options get max contracts. Mm-hmm. The problem is that a year after they signed him to that deal, the CBA changed, and it became way more punitive for teams to have super high salary guys together. You lose just a lot of flexibility in terms of aggregating salaries for trades. There's a bunch of other minutia that goes into it. But the rules changed after they signed him to this deal, and now LaVine hasn't been healthy. I thought last year LaVine mostly earned his money on that contract. For the last 60 games of the year, I believe he averaged 26 points a game, 63% true shooting. That's incredible volume scoring with top efficiency. That guy is worth the contract, in my opinion. Unfortunately, he hasn't been that guy this year. His play has totally fallen off a cliff. He's still only 28 years old, so it shouldn't be happening yet. And then he's had the injury issues, too. So the big question with the LaVine stuff right now is, will the Bulls get rid of him just to get rid of him? And the only team out there with smoke on Zach right now is the Detroit Pistons. You know, you're probably not going to get Jaden Ivey in that deal. You're not going to get Ausar Thompson in that deal. So what are you looking at? It's going to be essentially a salary dump. Maybe Bogdanovich, maybe Joe Harris, and then, you know, you'll debate whatever protections you can get on a first-round pick. It's not going to be a great offer for the Bulls if it truly is on the table. From my opinion, I would just do it. I'd bite the bullet, trade Zach, and, you know, he's unhappy here. I think that both the team and the player want a fresh start. I don't think there's going to be a lot of upside to holding on to him longer and, you know, still trying to pivot the team. Just having his salary on the books really limits the Bulls' flexibility, especially when Patrick Williams, if they re-sign him, will be due for a big raise. DeRozan potentially could be due for a big raise if they want to re-sign him, which they reportedly do. So, you know, it's going to be a bad return for Zach LaVine, unfortunately, if they do trade him. In my opinion, I think they still got to get rid of him and, you know, try to start the next iteration of this team without him.
Now, the Bulls wanting to sign DeMar DeRozan is only part of that. I mean, do you think if they get through this season without an extension and DeRozan hits the free agent market, I mean, does it behoove him to test those waters and just see where he can go to truly be a contender at this point in his career?
Yeah, sure. But if he's going to do that, he's likely going to have to take a big pay cut, right? Like, he can probably make more money with the Bulls than he will anywhere else because he means more to the Bulls than he would anywhere else. If he goes to the 76ers, hypothetically, you know, you're playing second fiddle to Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey. He's at best the third option there, which, you know, maybe at age 35, that's what's best for DeMar. We've seen Russell Westbrook really thrive in a smaller role this year with the Clippers. And I think that, you know, there's a case to be made that, you know, at this point, DeRozan should probably prioritize championships rather than being the best player on the team. But, you know, I'm not going to tell someone to take less money. There's only so many years you can make money as a professional athlete. If someone's offering DeRozan, you know, a 3-year, $90 million deal, which might be what it takes the Bulls to bring him back, you know, that's a lot of money. DeMar should probably take it at that point. So I think it's a really fascinating case on, you know, what they're going to do with DeRozan and the fact that he's an unrestricted free agent and that they refused to trade him last year and they maybe could have got more for him in a trade. It just makes it an even more interesting scenario for the team and the player.
Now, Ricky, you wrote yesterday for SB Nation about Caitlin Clark. You know, she was here. Well, here. She was in Evanston the other night. She faced Northwestern. And I follow her career very closely just through my coverage on Big Ten television and radio and it's my alma mater. It was really cool to see you writing about her yesterday after now becoming the all-time Big Ten leading women's basketball scorer. She's approaching the leading women's basketball scorer in history. But beyond the statistical success of her career, the type of supernova that she is and just sort of, you know, being a player that's transcended her sport in a lot of ways, she's in pretty rarefied air in that regard. What drew you to writing about Caitlin Clark?
Yeah, thanks for bringing up that column. I had a lot of fun going to that game at Northwestern and watching her and the Iowa women's team play. You know, she led the country in scoring as a true freshman. So she's been on the map for a long time, but I feel like the way she led Iowa to the national title game last year, going against LSU, that was such an all-time classic game. It really just like took her to a new stratosphere of fame, I feel like. And, you know, she's a phenomenal player. I don't think I've ever seen a basketball player who's that good on the ball, is like a high usage pick and roll level player who's also so good off the ball. And, you know, I think the comparison I used in my column is this would be like if, you know, prime James Harden or Russell Westbrook, who are the only two players in NBA history to put up a 40% usage rate, which is what Caitlin Clark has right now at Iowa, 40% usage rate. Those guys didn't do anything off the ball, right? Like, they weren't running around screens and stretching the defense horizontally to hit threes, but Clark does that. So she's sort of able to play, like, you know, high-usage James Harden and also do the Klay Thompson stuff where, you know, she can run off pin downs, and the gravity of her as a long-range shooter really warps the defense in multiple ways. So she's a totally unique player. I think she's phenomenal. I really wish the Chicago Sky could have gotten her, but unfortunately, James Wade, the Sky former head coach and GM, traded their first-round draft pick this year and a pick swap next year, so there's no chance they can get Caitlin Clark. That's too bad because she would have been phenomenal for a Chicago sports scene that I guess now needs Caleb Williams to save us because nothing else is going on good in town. But it was fun to watch Caitlin, and I think that, you know, she's going to have a lot of pressure on her this year going into March Madness because, as I wrote in my column, she did not win a state championship in 4 years in high school at Dowling Catholic in Iowa, and she has not won a national championship yet at Iowa. Obviously came only one win short last year, so it'll be interesting to try to watch her chase the elusive championship in her senior season this year.
And if we know nothing else, we know folks are going to watch, whether it's been streaming on Peacock or national TV games on NBC and Fox. She has been box office every step of the way. And so it's really cool that you took the time to write about her, and happy we could discuss her a bit tonight as well. We're going to keep tuning in, man. I'm going to keep looking for all your writings at SB Nation as well, Ricky. Appreciate you taking the time tonight.
Thank you, man.
That is Ricky O'Donnell on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. So in the basketball world, in the collegiate space, in the Big Ten space, in the Northwestern space, a bunch of parallels here with what we've been talking about, but on the men's side of things, the Northwestern Wildcats, they were on the brink of doing something most folks don't have the potential to do. They almost took down the Purdue Boilermakers twice in the same season. When Purdue came here to Evanston earlier in the year, Northwestern knocked them off. Folks stormed the court at Welsh Ryan Arena when Purdue was the number one team in the country. They gave the Boilermakers everything they could handle the other night and just narrowly missed another upset in overtime. But the Big Ten Conference had a little something to say about Chris Collins' reaction after that game when there was a statistical anomaly that none of us have seen at any point this century. I will tell you exactly what I mean with that, and we will hear from Chris Collins. We'll do all that coming up here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tobias had recently hired actor Carl Weathers as a drama coach.
Do you see me more as the respected dramatic actor or more of the beloved comic actor?
Whoa. There's still plenty of meat on that bone. Now you take this home, throw it in a pot, add some broth, a potato. Baby, you got a stew going.
Yes, that's fine. But I would like to focus on my acting, Mr. Weathers. I did give you my last $1,100.
Let me tell you a little story about acting. I was doing the Showtime movie Hot Ice with Ann Archer. Never once touched my per diem. I go to craft service, get some raw veggies, bacon, cup of soup. Baby, I had a stew going.
I think I'd like my money back.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
So I haven't spent much time with Arrested Development in the past. What I've seen very much appeals to me, but it's just not a show I've gotten to. But Carl Weathers passed earlier today. And that's unfortunate news, but we've just been, I've been playing some clips coming back from some of the breaks we've had throughout the night. Tonight, not only him being in Rocky, feels like Action Jackson, you know, man, like for me as a kid, just growing up and seeing Carl Weathers doing different things in film and television. It was always so much fun watching him. And I posted a picture on my Twitter and Instagram a bit earlier. The one time I very briefly got to cross paths with Carl Weathers in person was covering the draft in Philadelphia. The first couple of years, the NFL turned the draft into this traveling road show that it's become, because for decades it was just in New York City. But they had it the first couple of years they started to go on the road with it was in Chicago. So I was here doing the red carpet, the gold carpet and the red carpet. And then the back-to-back years it was in Chicago, and then they moved it to Philadelphia and Dallas. And now it's just been on the go every single year. But the year it was in Philly, Carl Weathers walked the red carpet and he's kind of weaving around, going back and forth. And I didn't know he was going to be there. We didn't have some list of all the stars and celebrities that were going to walk the red carpet in addition to all the anticipated first-round picks. But I'm out there. I'm getting ready to interview whatever Pac-12 prospect was going to be navigating the red carpet. So, like, okay, who's the next one coming up? I hear this roar coming kind of from over my shoulder. I turn around, and there's Carl Weathers looking great, especially for his age, man. He was around 70-ish. At that point, just looking good, had the suit on, strolling down the red carpet. Of course, everybody's yelling for him, Apollo, Apollo. You know, he's over there dapping some folks up. He's going one side of the red carpet, other side of the red carpet. So I snapped one very mediocre picture of him. You know, you can barely even tell. It's kind of a side profile. But I didn't want to miss my chance to dap up Carl Weathers as he made his way back to my side of the red carpet. So I kind of just snapped the one quick picture of him, just where you could even barely tell it was him. And he went by and, you know, gave him a little love, and then he kept on moving. But, you know, he's a guy who is a former professional athlete, just one of the many former pro athletes and football players who made their way, but very few made that transition as successfully as he did into becoming a movie star with the Rocky series. So, you know, it's disappointing news to hear that he had passed away. And I haven't watched The Mandalorian. I don't know, Sean.
I have.
For that matter. Okay, so In The Mandalorian, then, he's like one of the main characters in that series, right?
Yeah, he's the guy that, like, assigns the bounties for the other bounty hunters like The Mandalorian and whatnot. So he's pretty good in it. He's always great, but...
Now, The Mandalorian, are they still making fresh episodes? Has that run its course? Or do they still have new seasons?
I think so. I know there's three seasons. I think there's going to be another season that comes out. So it'll be interesting to see what they do without him. But he was a big part of the show. He's a big character, especially this previous season. They featured him a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah, that's unfortunate. I saw him even in the commercials that Gronk is doing right now.
He's supposed to be part of, like, the Kick of Destiny. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're running promotions here on The Score for it.
I would imagine this must be a surprising death then. You know, I haven't read the details on it or anything like that, but he's in these commercial advertisements where he's supposed to be out here hanging with Gronk. They did the handshake, kind of one of the most prominent memes on social media is the handshake between Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger from the movie Predator, where they both just got the biceps rippling and, you know, they're meeting each other for the first time in a while, and they kind of clasp hands.
It's a crispy clap, too, as well. It's very crisp.
The veins and the sinews are coming out of the bicep and the forearms, and they're just all both oiled up out in the jungle somewhere. And Carl Weathers in that moment with Arnold Schwarzenegger is a, you know, just one of the prominent. Is it a meme or a GIF or GIF or both? I don't know.
It's all the above. All the above. But yeah, I think you were right. Meme.
Yeah, qualifies as all of those. But, you know, so he and Gronk do that in a commercial. So it's one of those moments that everyone can associate with what he and Schwarzenegger did in Predator. He and Gronk did it. So, you know, he will not be a part of that. I do wonder. They got over a week here to figure something out. You would hope. I don't anticipate Gronk being the one to deliver any sort of poignant phrase about Carl Weathers when that's going down. But whatever they do with this kick of destiny, you would hope maybe they'll find some way to sort of honor Carl Weathers within that, since he was a part of the ad campaign, kind of, you know, going towards it, moving up for it. But I did promise some sound from Chris Collins, the Northwestern men's basketball coach, who right now is on the cusp. I mean, Northwestern is putting the type of season together here where Chris Collins is in line to make some more program history. You know, he's the only coach to have ever led Northwestern to the NCAA tournament. He's done so twice. The most recent time was last season. Now, the first time he took Northwestern to the NCAA tournament, they had a couple of lean years after that. And now they went back last year. Boo Booey returned for another season. And if Zach Edey wasn't in the Big Ten dominating with Purdue and the reigning national player of the year, Northwestern's point guard, Boo Booey, would be probably the next player in line for Big Ten player of the year consideration. But the other night, Northwestern and Purdue, after Northwestern was able to upset Purdue, like I mentioned earlier in the season, they did so at home in Evanston. Folks stormed the court after they took down the Boilermakers for the second year in a row. Northwestern knocked off Purdue as the number one team in the country. But a lot of us thought, all right, Purdue has them coming to West Lafayette. Northwestern traveled to Mackey Arena, and Purdue wasn't going to be sleeping on them this time. But there is something about this matchup where Northwestern just seems to have Purdue's number, where they play them hard every single time, and they did so again the other night. And it went to overtime. They nearly took Purdue down the other night also. Purdue had to go to OT to figure out a way to make this thing happen. So Purdue ends up winning 105-96. So it was one of these games where it just looks like Purdue dominated overtime, when really, you know, it was a game that just narrowly went to OT. Boo Booey, a very excellent clutch player as a point guard for the Wildcats, he had one of his patented floaters that he was able to shoot towards the end of regulation, wasn't able to hit the shot. But the biggest storyline coming out of the game, in addition to how competitive Northwestern was in the game against the number two Boilermakers, was the free throw discrepancy. Because as of right now, Northwestern's resume looks like a team. You know, they took down the Illini last week, a top 10 Illinois squad. So they've got a resume that seems like it should end up, if they can continue this thing, should end up being worthy of the NCAA tournament. Again, still some work to do. They're just halfway through their conference schedule. But the game itself, there was a ginormous free throw discrepancy in the game, where Purdue was 29 out of 46 from the line. Northwestern, 6 out of 8 from the free throw line. So Purdue attempted 38 more free throws than Northwestern in this basketball game. That 38 free throw attempt difference is the biggest disparity in free throw attempts in a Big Ten game this century. Never seen anything like that since 1999. So that's the type of discrepancy that most coaches will feel a certain type of way about. Chris Collins addressed that with the media after that game against Purdue.
Two was the discrepancy in free throws on your exit out. Is that what provoked a lot of that?
No, I'm not going to go into the officiating. You know, we have great officiating. I just don't know if I've ever seen a box score like that. Honestly, I've been, you know, you guys, I don't know, you guys have been doing this too. A lot of you guys have been covering. I don't know if you've ever seen a disparity like that in a Big Ten game, which is like Purdue. Obviously, we're fouling that much. I mean, I feel like we're aggressive, though, too. You know, I felt like, I mean, Boo Booey doesn't shoot a free throw in the game. That's kind of crazy. But that's how the game's called. I mean, it's and you got to live with it. I mean, that's why I was so proud of my guys. I mean, if you're down 50 at the free throw line and you have a shot at the buzzer, so I mean, you almost have to play perfect, you know. And so our guys showed a lot of poise. Obviously, this is not many people come in here and win, and there's a reason for that because they have great teams and this crowd is awesome and such a fun environment to play in. And you know, it's disappointing because, you know, we had our chances. We just couldn't close the deal.
So at this point, Northwestern 15-6 on the season, 6-4 in conference play. So they're in the midst of another excellent season, especially by Northwestern men's basketball standards. But this was an opportunity to put another feather in their cap from a tournament resume perspective. When you're talking about net ranking right now, even though Northwestern has had a couple of upsets of top 10 teams this season, but their net ranking, because of that loss they had earlier in the season, before the turn of the new year, they lost to Chicago State. That was just a couple of games after the initial upset of Purdue earlier in the season. Earlier in the month of December, they beat Purdue. A couple of games later, they lose to Chicago State. Not even a good Chicago State squad, but Northwestern loses to them in overtime just a couple of games after they had defeated the number one team in the country at home. So that's a bit of an albatross hanging around the neck and the tournament resume of the Wildcats. But here they sit now after the defeat against Purdue, a quality performance, a game that goes to overtime. But Chris Collins did end up getting ejected from that game because of that free throw disparity. He addressed it with the media afterwards. And at one point he's saying like, you know, I'm not going to talk about the officials. The officials are amazing. But here's the issue with the officials. Big Ten didn't love that. They didn't like the approach that Chris Collins took in addressing the media after the game, and also the performance, the behavior during the ejection. So Big Ten Conference had this to say about Chris Collins. They announced a violation of sportsmanship policy by Northwestern University men's basketball coach. They issued an institutional fine of $5,000 and a public reprimand of Northwestern University men's basketball head coach Chris Collins for violating the Big Ten sportsmanship policy. The violation is a result of Coach Collins's actions at the end of the Northwestern versus Purdue game on January 31st. The fine and reprimand are a result of Conference Agreement 10.01, stating in part that the Big Ten Conference expects all contests involving a member institution to be conducted without compromise to any fundamental element of sportsmanship. Such fundamental elements include integrity of the competition, civility toward all, and respect, particularly toward opponents and officials. Now, I'll say this. I think to the letter of the law, like, you can go on social media and find Chris Collins' behavior during his ejection. I think for the most part, as far as the fundamental elements of sportsmanship, you know, yeah, he got in the official's face a little bit. You know, he ran onto the court. He kind of got in the ref's face a little bit, and he's screaming some. But, you know, it wasn't like he didn't shove an official, he didn't curse a guy out or anybody. You know, and then before he actually exited the court, he made it a point. He went up and shook Matt Painter's hand after he got ejected, made it a point to find it's not hard to find Zach Edey. He's 7'5" or whatever. He's the biggest dude out there in the whole arena. But he made it a point to seek out Zach Edey, dap him up, congratulate him, kind of pumped up the away crowd, waving his hands up, you know, as he's exiting the venue. And his comments afterwards weren't that incendiary. But Big Ten decided they were going to issue an institutional fine of $5,000 because of the behavior and the comments of Chris Collins after that game. But 38 free throw difference. I will say this. The approach Northwestern took during the game. Now, Northwestern's approach against Purdue in both games has essentially been hack-a-zack, where they go out there, the few big men that they have, they expend the majority of their fouls just trying to make sure Zach Edey isn't going to go off for 30 or 40 points. But then also, on Northwestern's offensive end, they don't necessarily have guys who attack the basket. I mentioned how excellent their point guard, Boo Booey, is. He's their program's number two all-time leading scorer right now. But he either, like the other night, he had 7 3-pointers, just went off from deep. When he does penetrate, though, he's not a guy who's looking for contact when he gets near the basket. He's not a guy with a big, strong physical frame who's kind of finishing through defenders. he has this amazing teardrop. If you've watched any Northwestern basketball in recent years, you've seen Boo Booey. Sometimes in like critical clutch moments late in the game, he'll get sometimes 12, 15, 18 feet away from the basket and shoot this floater that he's just got amazing touch on, and just it's all net the majority of the time. But that style of play from Boo Booey and frankly from Northwestern's offense in general is not one that consistently picks up a bunch of fouls on the opponent. Statistically, Northwestern does not normally pick up many fouls on the opposing team. That particular game, you're looking at a 38 free throw discrepancy. I do understand Chris Collins' concerns there. Now, the technical fouls that were placed on him in overtime because of him going off on the refs, that enhanced that discrepancy a little bit more. So I think there's a valid case for him to make in how that game played out. But just to provide a little bit of context, statistically, you know, there were some reasons for why it played out the way that it did. I did promise you we'd get a couple more Colin Cowherd clips in from how things went down when he was on the afternoon show earlier today. We will do that after one final timeout. I'm Anthony Herron. This is The Score.
Now you pissed me off.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That was a clip from Action Jackson. That was the one film, the one major motion picture I can think of that Carl Weathers starred in that was, you know, his own true action vehicle was Action Jackson. He was the main name there on the billboard, if you will, in promotions for it. That was the movie that he was the star of. It was Carl Weathers. It was Vanity. Who else was in that?
I think he's beating up Craig T. Nelson in that scene.
Yep. There you go. Craig T. Nelson was the villain in that movie, a.k.a. Coach.
Coach, Fox. Yep.
Craig T. Nelson of Coach fame. So, and it was an enjoyable 80s action movie. You know, you heard the exaggerated audio of the punches and the gunshots. That's how we were getting down in the 80s. Any other children of the 80s out there, you kind of know what we were doing. Everything was bigger and louder in movies back then. And that was what Action Jackson sounded like as Carl Weathers was saving the day, saving Vanity from whatever Craig T. Nelson was trying to do to her in that movie. But he met his unfortunate demise. And like I mentioned earlier, I was coming out of a movie theater. My wife and I went and saw a movie earlier today and came out of there and checked social media, as we tend to do. So, oh, man, I see Carl Weathers trending. I hope it's not for it. Yep, all right, it's for that. Never know after somebody gets to a certain age. I'm 76 years old. He was the number one trending topic on Twitter. But the way that the Caleb Williams coverage has gone over the last couple of days here, and frankly over the last few years, I opened the show with it, but it kind of came to a head over the last couple of days here in this town and on this radio station, partly with reaction to Colin Cowherd on his show, The Herd. Yesterday was not reporting. I almost slipped and said the word reporting, but yesterday was not that. Yesterday he was sort of opining about Caleb Williams, about the NFL draft, about the potential combination between Williams and the Chicago Bears. And, you know, as he was talking through it during his Herdline news segment, then he just kind of, you know, elicited the thought that perhaps it would still be on the table that Washington could trade up with the Bears. Maybe Caleb Williams doesn't want to end up in Chicago. He'd rather go to his hometown team. So that potential was there. Kind of informed speculation. Immediately, one of the same thing. I'm kind of running around yesterday. Wasn't really tracking things that closely. See social media lighting up about some stuff. Kind of listen in like, oh, man. Like, oh, excuse me. The afternoon show was kind of going off about it. Everybody's reacting everywhere on social. So like, all right, let me go kind of check this out, see what's happening. I reached out to a few folks out there. They kind of gave me the impression that, yeah, that wasn't necessarily, you know, strictly sourced reporting that Colin was attempting to do in that moment. He did come on the afternoon show earlier today just to kind of clarify some of the things. And he did have some things that he was willing to give specific voice to and saying that he was reporting certain things that came directly from Caleb Williams' family. But one of the things he addressed was how he would advise Caleb Williams, because Colin is not as high on the Chicago Bears' circumstance right now as some of us are heading into next season.
What we're trying to figure out is if we're going to be faced with a situation that was Elway or Eli.
No. So I was told last night, Caleb does not want to be a villain. He doesn't want to be a villain. He knows there's no perfect landing spot. The concerns I was told 8-9 weeks ago, I'm not backtracking. They're real.
Right, but if the Bears want to draft Caleb Williams is fine being a Bear?
Yes, he won't pull. He won't. If I was his agent, I think I would voice concerns about. I don't have the confidence Chicago talk show hosts have about Chicago. They've had one winning season in 11 years. They haven't had a top 15 offense in a decade. In a league that's trying to create parity, they break the system. They've never had a great quarterback. Jay Cutler, I think, is your all-time leader. He'd be like the Packers' fourth best quarterback.
There's no disputing any of that.
But that was true about the Bengals before Burrow, and it was true on some level about Kansas City before Mahomes.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
No, but they were thought to be a mess.
Boomer Esiason, MVP. Carson Palmer, great. Kenny Anderson. They had very good offenses and very robust quarterback play. The Bears have never had a great quarterback.
Throw Andy Dalton in there as well. He led them to a couple of playoff appearances as well. I mean, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals before Joe Burrow had been a more consistent franchise than the Bears already. I ran through the numbers and, you know, I looked at the last quarter century here. The Bears have been to 6 out of the last 25 playoffs. The Bengals have been 9 out of the last 25 playoffs. Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton are part of that even before Joe Burrow. So, you know, the Bengals are not one of the most successful franchises in the NFL over the last quarter century, but they've been more consistent than the Bears have, and Joe Burrow is the only one. Well, you know what? They've actually, between Carson Palmer and Joe Burrow, you can make the case that they've hit on two different number one overall picks, so credit to the Bengals in that regard. Neither one has won a Super Bowl for them, though. One last clip, though, I want to play from Colin Cowherd, where he was saying that there are some things that he thinks are legitimate and worthy of concern from Caleb Williams' perspective about Chicago.
I don't report everything I know on Caleb. When the stuff came out about Caleb, the stuff came up about his dad's going to break this and that, I went on and said, nonsense.
There's been so much like that he wants equity in a team.
I downplayed all of that.
Right. Okay.
But I was told after the season, there's stuff that worries him. He's the best prospect since Elway.
Yes.
Yes, he's worried. They have the only defensive coach in the division. The roster's got a bona fide number one. He likes the defense. I was told last night, Chicago's a big, loud, pressurized city. Loves that. Jordan, Bulls. He likes that. I was told he thinks the defense is really good. He doesn't have to win by shootout. He loves DJ Moore. He thinks the O-line's is better than people think. He doesn't think it's a disaster, but yes. And I said this to somebody. If Caleb was your son and he was the number one lawyer or whatever, he was the number one tech guy or whatever in the market, and he had to go, right? He didn't have choices. He had limited. Wouldn't you be like, yeah, this company doesn't win a lot?
I don't know that, you know, kind of what we heard from Colin there with Danny and Matt didn't backtrack, quote unquote, but it didn't fully explain, I don't think, just kind of where he went with things yesterday. But it can be difficult when you're on the air. You know, I do my morning show on Big Ten Radio where I'm on the air for 3 hours every morning there. And then pretty frequently, as you know, I'm here on The Score as well for several hours after doing that. So sometimes when you talk a lot and you spend hours and hours saying things, and especially if it's about a topic that has been discussed a lot, that you've been on the record about quite a bit, then you can run far afield. And I think that's a part of what happened with Colin yesterday. I just think he didn't phrase things as succinctly as he would have liked during that Herdline News segment. I don't think he was necessarily trying to break the internet or get aggregated with that, because if he was, they would have been putting it out from Colin's accounts. And they didn't. Just other folks picked it up because he referenced Caleb Williams and the Bears. And folks tend to like those topics. They tend to pick that up and run with it a little bit. we have run out of our 3 hours here. This is my allotment of time with you this evening. I want to thank my guy Eric Edholm for spending some time with me. Thanks to Herb Howard and Lisa Bluter, as well as Ricky O'Donnell, talking some hoops later on in the show. My thanks to Sean Sears on the ones and twos for me this evening, and apparently thanks to Clint as well. That was fun hearing Clint on there. I'm going to have to get Clint to crack the mic next time. Also, my thanks to you, appreciations and salutations, for your participation in my endeavors here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
So you're a hockey player, huh?
Yeah.
You're going to give that up? You're going to concentrate on golf?
Who the hell are you?
I'm the club pro here, Chubbs Peterson. And I'm offering to teach you how to play golf personally, for free.
No.
You have no idea who I am, do you?
No, I don't.
Back in 1965, Sports Illustrated said I was going to be the next Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, what happened?
They wouldn't let me play on the pro tour anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because you're black?
Hell no. Damned alligator bit my hand off.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, tournament down in Florida. I hooked my ball in the rough down by the lake. Damned alligator just popped up. Cut me down in my prime. He got me. But I tore one of that bastard's eyes out, though. Look at that.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcast.
The Score.
Now you pissed me off.
We're back. Live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That was a clip from Action Jackson. That was the one film, the one major motion picture I can think of that Carl Weathers starred in that was, you know, his own true action vehicle was Action Jackson. He was the main name there on the billboard, if you will, in promotions for it. That was the movie that he was the star of. It was Carl Weathers. It was Vanity. Who else was in that?
I think he's beating up Craig T. Nelson in that scene.
Yep. There you go. Craig T. Nelson was the villain in that movie, a.k.a. Coach.
Coach, Fox. Yep.
Craig T. Nelson of Coach fame. So, and it was an enjoyable 80s action movie. You know, you heard the exaggerated audio of the punches and the gunshots. That's how we were getting down in the 80s. Any other children of the 80s out there, you kind of know what we were doing. Everything was bigger and louder in movies back then. And that was what Action Jackson sounded like as Carl Weathers was saving the day, saving Vanity from whatever Craig T. Nelson was trying to do to her in that movie. But he met his unfortunate demise. And like I mentioned earlier, I was coming out of a movie theater. My wife and I went and saw a movie earlier today and came out of there and checked social media, as we tend to do. So, oh, man, I see Carl Weathers trending. I hope it's not for it. Yep, all right, it's for that. Never know after somebody gets to a certain age. I'm 76 years old. He was the number one trending topic on Twitter. But the way that the Caleb Williams coverage has gone over the last couple of days here, and frankly over the last few years, I opened the show with it, but it kind of came to a head over the last couple of days here in this town and on this radio station, partly with reaction to Colin Cowherd on his show, The Herd. yesterday was not reporting. I almost slipped and said the word reporting, but yesterday was not that. Yesterday he was sort of opining about Caleb Williams, about the NFL draft, about the potential combination between Williams and the Chicago Bears. And, you know, as he was talking through it during his Herdline news segment, then he just kind of, you know, elicited the thought that perhaps it would still be on the table, that Washington could trade up with the Bears. Maybe Caleb Williams doesn't want to end up in Chicago. He'd rather go to his hometown team. So that potential was there. Kind of informed speculation. Immediately, one the same thing. I'm kind of running around yesterday, wasn't really tracking things that closely. See social media lighting up about some stuff, kind of listening in, like, oh man, like, oh, excuse me. The afternoon show was kind of going off about it. Everybody's reacting everywhere on social. So, like, all right, let me go kind of check this out, see what's happening. I reach out to a few folks out there. They kind of gave me the impression that, yeah, that wasn't necessarily, you know, strictly sourced reporting that Colin was attempting to do in that moment. He did come on the afternoon show earlier today just to kind of clarify some of the things. And he did have some things that he was willing to give specific voice to and say that he was reporting certain things that came directly from Caleb Williams' family. But one of the things he addressed was how he would advise Caleb Williams, because Colin is not as high on the Chicago Bears circumstance right now as some of us are heading into next season.
What we're trying to figure out is if we're going to be faced with a situation that was Elway or Eli.
No. So I was told last night, Caleb does not want to be a villain. He doesn't want to be a villain. He knows there's no perfect landing spot. The concerns I was told 8-9 weeks ago, I'm not backtracking. They're real.
Right, but if the Bears want to draft Caleb Williams is fine being a Bear?
Yes, he won't pull. He won't. If I was his agent, I think I would voice concerns about. I don't have the confidence Chicago talk show hosts have about Chicago. They've had one winning season in 11 years. They haven't had a top 15 offense in a decade. In a league that's trying to create parity, they break the system. They've never had a great quarterback. Jay Cutler, I think, is your all-time leader. He'd be like the Packers' fourth best quarterback.
There's no disputing any of that.
But that was true about the Bengals before Burrow, and it was true on some level about Kansas City before Mahomes.
No, it wasn't.
No, but they were thought to be a mess.
Boomer Esiason, MVP. Carson Palmer, right. Great. Kenny Anderson. They had very good offenses and very robust quarterback play. The Bears have never had a great quarterback.
Throw Andy Dalton in there as well. He led them to a couple of playoff appearances as well. I mean, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals before Joe Burrow had been a more consistent franchise than the Bears already. I ran through the numbers and, you know, I looked at the last quarter century here. The Bears have been to 6 out of the last 25 playoffs. Bengals have been 9 out of the last 25 playoffs. Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton are part of that even before Joe Burrow. So, you know, the Bengals are not one of the most successful franchises in the NFL over the last quarter century, but they've been more consistent than the Bears have. And Joe Burrow is the only one. Well, you know what? They've actually, between Carson Palmer and Joe Burrow, you can make the case that they've hit on two different number one overall picks. So credit to the Bengals in that regard. Neither one has won a Super Bowl for them, though. One last clip, though, I want to play from Colin Cowherd, where he was saying that there are some things that he thinks are legitimate and worthy of concern from Caleb Williams' perspective about Chicago.
I don't report everything I know on Caleb. When the stuff came out about Caleb, the stuff came up about his dad's going to break this and that, I went on and said, nonsense.
There's been so much like that he wants equity in a team.
I downplayed all of that.
Right. Okay.
But I was told after the season, there's stuff that worries him. He's the best prospect since Elway.
Yes.
Yes, he's worried. They have the only defensive coach in the division. The roster's got a bona fide number one. He likes the deep. I was told last night, Chicago's a big, loud, pressurized city. Loves that. Jordan, Bulls. He likes that. I was told he thinks the defense is really good. He doesn't have to win by shootout. He loves DJ Moore. He thinks the O-line is better than people think. He doesn't think it's a disaster, but yes. And I said this to somebody. If Caleb was your son, and he was the number one lawyer or whatever. He was the number one tech guy or whatever in the market. And he had to go, right? He didn't have choices. He had limited. Wouldn't you be like, yeah, this company doesn't win a lot?
I don't know that, you know, kind of what we heard from Colin there with Danny and Matt, didn't necessarily, he didn't backtrack, quote unquote, but it didn't fully explain, I don't think, just kind of where he went with things yesterday. But it can be difficult when you're on the air. You know, I do my morning show on Big Ten Radio where I'm on the air for 3 hours every morning there. And then pretty frequently, as you know, I'm here on The Score as well for several hours after doing that. So sometimes when you talk a lot and you spend hours and hours saying things, and especially if it's about a topic that has been discussed a lot, that you've been on the record about quite a bit, then you can run far afield. And I think that's a part of what happened with Colin yesterday. I just think he didn't phrase things as succinctly as he would have liked during that Herdline news segment. I don't think he was necessarily trying to break the internet or get aggregated with that, because if he was, they would have been putting it out from Colin's accounts. And they didn't. Just other folks picked it up because he referenced Caleb Williams and the Bears. And folks tend to like those topics. They tend to pick that up and run with it a little bit. We have run out of our 3 hours here. This is my allotment of time with you this evening. I want to thank my guy Eric Edholm for spending some time with me. Thanks to Herb Howard and Lisa Bluter, as well as Ricky O'Donnell, talking some hoops later on in the show. My thanks to Sean Sears on the ones and twos for me this evening. And apparently, thanks to Clint as well. That was fun hearing Clint on there. I'm going to have to get Clint to crack the mic next time. Also, my thanks to you, appreciations and salutations, for your participation in my endeavors here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So you're a hockey player, huh?
Yeah.
You're going to give that up? You're going to concentrate on golf?
Who the hell are you?
I'm the club pro here, Chubbs Peterson. And I'm offering to teach you how to play golf personally, for free.
No.
You have no idea who I am, do you?
No, I don't.
Back in 1965, Sports Illustrated said I was going to be the next Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, what happened?
They wouldn't let me play on the pro tour anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because you're black?
Hell no. Damned alligator bit my hand off.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, tournament down in Florida. I hooked my ball in the rough down by the lake. Damned alligator just popped up. Cut me down in my prime. He got me. But I tore one of that bastard's eyes out, though. Look at that.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral. Voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.